Hello and welcome to VOA Asia, your daily roundup of news and information from the United States. We invite you to join us on Facebook at VOA Asia and follow us on Twitter and Instagram. VOA Asia also has great videos for you to see on our YouTube channel. We say hello today to our listeners joining us on great radio stations from around Asia. And if you like, download our program from iTunes or the voanews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's get started with today's program. Australian military chiefs are warning of the threat from increasingly sophisticated cyber attacks. They say that while the dangers do not need a traditional military response, Australia must find new ways to combat them. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
Propaganda isn't new, but the way it's delivered by technology is changing rapidly. Senior Australian Defence Force officers believe their nation is increasingly exposed to cyber attacks and misinformation. They've echoed concerns raised in the United States about the use of computer attacks and the manipulation of social and mass media during Russia's efforts to seize Crimea from Ukraine in 2014. General Angus Campbell is the chief of the Australian Defence Force.
In a world that's becoming more connected, these activities range from information campaigns, cyber operations and theft of intellectual property to coercion and propaganda that subvert, erode and undermine, breaking international rules and norms, but ones that, in the eyes of the targeted state, fall short of requiring a war response.
China is suspected of orchestrating a surge of cyber attacks on Australian businesses. In December, Australia said its companies were among the global victims of an extensive campaign of cyber espionage attacks backed by the Chinese government. The confirmation came after the US Justice Department charged two Chinese nationals, alleging they carried out hacking on behalf of Beijing's Ministry of State Security. It was the first time Australia had explicitly blamed China for cybercrime. Earlier this year, computers at Federal Parliament in Canberra were hacked in what officials believed was the work of a foreign government. A recent report suggested that Australia needed to train 18,000 additional computer experts by 2026 to fight the cybersecurity wars. But there was a warning that at the present rate, the country was likely to fall short. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
What's among the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com? It may be trade or economic developments in the region. Are the currents calm or choppy in the South China Sea? What is happening in reclusive North Korea? Is there a new movie or technology that interests you? China is huge and diverse. There's always something happening in the Middle Kingdom. You'll find expanded coverage of all of these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia and also on the voanews.com website. Phil Mercer has also been following new research which shows Australia's Great Barrier Reef is being contaminated with microdebris. The Australian Institute of Marine Science warns that it's another significant threat to the nation's greatest natural treasure.
Researchers found that the worst pollutants on the Great Barrier Reef weren't tiny bits of plastic, but microfibers containing synthetic polymers, nylon and polyester. The effects of these almost invisible pollutants on fish or people are still unknown, but conservationists are worried they'll put more pressure on the famous reef off northeastern Australia. It's already suffering from the mass bleaching of coral caused by warmer ocean temperatures, as well as overfishing and the runoff of farm pollution. Dr. Frederica Kroon is a principal research scientist at the Australian Institute of Marine Science.
all the water samples had microplastics in them, and almost all of the fish that we collected also had microplastics in them. We had one fish that was clogged up with what we called a nest of microfibers. A fish may think it's full, but in fact, it actually has only eaten a lot of microfibers, and so it doesn't get any nutrition.
It's unclear where the tiny particles are coming from. The research team speculates that they may arrive on ocean currents, be waste from ships, simply blown in on the wind, or contained in sewage. Researchers believe the micro debris could start off as furnishing, textiles, clothing, and packaging material that break down in the ocean and turn into micro particles. The Great Barrier Reef is about the same size as Italy or Japan. The World Heritage Area is the largest coral reef system on the planet and covers 344,000 square kilometres. It's so big it can be seen from space. Found off the Queensland coast, it's made up of 3,000 individual reef systems and is home to a spectacular array of plants and animals. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
What's happening now in Asia? Check our VOA Asia Facebook page. There you'll find all the latest stories from Asia and perhaps very close to where you live. Will it have an effect on your life? We check with experts and correspondents to bring you the answers. Also, stop by our website at voanews.com. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia.
We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Tens of thousands of elderly refugees living in camps in and around Myanmar are being failed by a humanitarian response that is not taking into account their needs, according to Amnesty International. The group's report is based on interviews with hundreds of refugees living in camps in Bangladesh. The crisis began 3 years ago as clashes erupted between ethnic militia and the Myanmar military, forcing millions of Muslim Rohingya people to flee their villages in the northeastern Rakhine state. We have more from Henry Ridgewell.
Kutu Palong in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, the world's biggest refugee camp. Over 600,000 people live here, most of them ethnic Rohingyas from Myanmar. Neighbouring camps bring the total number of refugees in the region to close to 1 million. They have fled brutal attacks by the Myanmar military and spiralling conflict between ethnic militia. While younger people are able to escape the attacks on their villages, the older residents often stay put. Mariam Khatun fled with her three children when Myanmar soldiers entered her village in Maungdor township.
When the soldiers came and set houses on fire, my parents were inside. My parents hadn't been able to move on their own for 5 years. We couldn't take them with us when we fled. We crossed the river. My parents were burned to death when the house was torched.
The elderly Rohingya who are able to reach the refugee camps face another set of challenges. Amnesty says they are frequently unable to access basic facilities.
Much of the infrastructure set up in terms of the humanitarian response is based around an assumption of being able to get to a distribution point or a water point or a camp clinic. And if physically you are unable to walk up and down the hills of the Bangladesh refugee camps to get to a latrine or a water point or a camp clinic, then those are inaccessible to you.
Many of the elderly refugees have been forced to flee their homes three or more times during their lives.
Everything was burning. The security forces were in the village. They were torching homes from one side to the other.
The Myanmar government argues it is safe for the refugees to return, but authorities are refusing to give the Rohingya full citizenship or allow them to return to their homes.
The question here is about when is the right time for the Rohingya to return to Myanmar. In order for this to happen, the conditions in Myanmar need to be in place for there to be a safe, dignified and long-term solution.
Until that happens, Amnesty says the vast aid operation must take greater account of the specific needs of the elderly refugees. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series. Education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues on sea and on land, New York City has countless attractions for its many visitors. Now there's a new and very unusual tourist draw, whale watching. It seems more and more whales are being spotted near Manhattan. Environmentalists say it's an encouraging sign the water is becoming cleaner. Anna Nelson has this story narrated by Anna Rice.
Unlikely neighbors, New York skyscrapers and large magnificent whales. But it's now reality in Manhattan. Thanks to much better water quality, scientists say the whales are swimming close to New York Harbor again after a century. They began returning a few years ago, attracting tourists and locals. That's when lifelong aquarium curator Paul C. Suerda founded the all-volunteer organization Gotham Whale. The group gathers information about these creatures and passes it along to scientists.
And we do that through citizen scientists. That could be anyone walking this boardwalk. If there was a whale breaching or feeding out here, and they were able to take a photograph to document that, that would go into our database as a data point.
Scientists use the information to track the whale's movement and make sure boats and vessels in the harbor slow down when the whales are most active. Some boats, like American Princess, carry tourists hoping to catch a glimpse or snap a picture of the creatures.
Oh, there he is!
Down there.
New whale photographs are compared to others in a catalog that scientists have kept for years. More than 105 have been identified so far. Experts say the animal's tails and fins are the best identifiers. Each is unique, like a person's fingerprint.
This fluke looks familiar. I know I've seen this whale before. It's showing that they're remembering this area as a food source, that they can get food here, and they're coming. Whoa!
Even though people are fascinated by whales, experts say many don't know much about them. They can live up to 200 years, go without sleep for 3 months, and go without food for up to 8 months. They can also hear each other from as far as 15 kilometers away. And thanks to hydrophones that record whales under the water, scientists have discovered there are at least 8 different species of whales swimming near the Big Apple.
Now, to be able to work with these animals that are free and happy and having them come back to the New York waters is just fantastic.
A mere stop on a long journey for the whales, but a powerful signal about nature's resilience.
From the water to dry ground, New York is embracing a new environmentally friendly, although not quite revolutionary, way to eradicate weeds in the city's Riverside Park. The Big Apple is welcoming 24 goats that will spend the summer in the park eating away invasive plants and poison ivy. Anna Rice returns to narrate this story by Elena Wolf.
You guys, this is Mac.
It's hard to believe these are just goats, not movie stars. There's a fenced-off path, park rangers here and there, people cheering and trying to snap a picture. Dan Gorodnik, president of New York's Riverside Park, was proud to officially introduce the herd to passersby. Goats, sent here from a farm on nearby Staten Island, are known for being very calm and obedient. And, what's more important, for always being ready to snack.
We also know that for them, this is like treating them to an all-you-can-eat buffet. It is a wonderful occasion. They've got the best views of the Hudson River.
Invasive plants, including poison ivy and mugwort, have not been trimmed here for decades. But what pesticides may not be able to conquer, goats will be happy to call lunch.
Any animal, a cow, a horse, a sheep that eats vegetation, they're eating the seeds. And not to sound silly, but when they poop, they're pooping little fertilizer pellets with seeds in them. Goats have a very rugged digestive system, and it kills the seeds. So they're not only clearing the ground, they're not replanting.
Larry Sahanek came up with this organic business idea some 14 years ago. So this is not the first business trip for his goats. He has sent them to states across the country, from California to Virginia. But his goats have never been to the Big Apple before.
People oriented it as gregarious as dogs. You could train a goat to do practically anything a dog does except bark. They live in a house if you let them.
A goat lover my whole life, and I know it's a bit strange, and now goats are in my backyard in New York City.
And other New Yorkers seem to love goats as well. Some do yoga with them, others feed their kids to the accompaniment of bleating.
Another goat volunteer. We're all here.
Goat tenders.
But finally, time to let the new Manhattan stars get to business. For the next 3 months, the goats will be working in Riverside Park, so close to visitors but untouchable, behind a special fence. And it seems they already feel at home in New York. After all, the city's nickname, Gotham City, means goat's town in Anglo-Saxon. For Elena Wolf in New York, NRI's VOA News.
News alerts from VOA Asia keep you up to date on the biggest stories as they happen. Listen daily to VOA Asia and stop by our Facebook page to get daily headlines and all of our latest posts with features and breaking news. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. How dangerous is COVID-19? 80% of the cases are said to be mild. Young and healthy people are at a relatively low risk. Elderly and people with serious health conditions are at risk of fatality. If you have a cough, fever, and shortness of breath, contact a doctor and stay away from other people. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a utility company that supplies electricity in the Washington area has given away 1,000 free trees to residential customers with the goal of saving energy. Pepco is one of dozens of companies in America working with the nonprofit Arbor Day Foundation on the plan. While the main goal is to conserve energy, officials say the trees will benefit homeowners and neighborhoods in other ways, too. Faiza El-Masri reports from Hyattsville, Maryland, in this story narrated by Faith Lapidus.
Gardening is Anka Meyer's favorite hobby, and she loves to plant trees in her yard.
Right now they bloom, and they will be green, and then they have fall color, so they change throughout the year, which is really nice. I mean, trees generate happiness.
Trees also improve air quality and reduce the effect of summer heat.
Trees make a huge difference in the climate around your house and also energy savings if they shade from the south side and the west side especially. What we notice is when we come in from the streets into our area, the temperature actually drops by several degrees, probably 5 to 10 degrees Fahrenheit because of the tree cover.
This is the second year Meyer is taking part in a program that gives her trees. Last year she got a red maple. Now she's getting ready to plant the dogwood she received through the Energy Saving Trees program, sponsored by the local utility company Pepco and the nonprofit Arbor Day Foundation.
They are native to this region, so they don't grow in the cold, and it's really a beautiful tree. Getting a tree is actually, it's an investment, especially if you get trees that are disease resistant.
By serving as a windbreak in the winter and providing shade in the summer, the Arbor Day Foundation's Kristen Boske says trees can help homeowners conserve energy, save money, and more.
Providing a tree to homeowners can increase a property value by up to 18%.
Bosque says the Arbor Day Foundation has partnered with Pepco since 2011 to help its customers reduce energy costs, as well as bring an environmental outlook to the communities they serve. And she expects the initiative to grow.
The Arbor Day Foundation just launched an initiative along with our partners called the Time for Trees Initiative. Through that initiative, we will be planting 100 million trees and inspiring 5 million tree planters around the globe to bring trees to communities, to forests, to everywhere that trees are needed.
According to Pepco spokesperson Christina Harper, the Energy Saving Trees program has grown more popular over the last 8 years.
About 10,500 homeowners have benefited from this important partnership, and we've seen that over 17,000 trees have been planted. A properly planted tree can save homeowners about 15% to 30% on their energy bills.
Tree lover Anka Meyer encourages others to plant trees.
Try to find out which trees are native in your area. Don't plant anything that is not adapted to it. Look where you plant. Don't plant it too close to the house.
That's the impact the program organizers hope to have, inspiring more people around the globe to plant trees. For writer Faiza El-Masri in Hyattsville, Maryland, Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
It's indisputable Leonardo da Vinci was an artistic and scientific genius, but getting a handle on his consummate but temperamental master of the arts is difficult. VOA's Kevin Enix reports a new display of his work and some new research into his state of mind are shedding new light on the artistic master.
It's been 500 years since Leonardo da Vinci died, but thanks to a new art installation in Milan, he can still say hello. Here, visitors can see some of his most famous works, but also some of his flights of fancy, paddle boats and flying machines.
We created this room imagining his flying machines. He designed a lot of different machines, so we created a few of them in 3D that fly over his landscapes, his backgrounds, among which there is his famous landscape of Vinci, the one he painted and drew as a child when he was making his first steps as an artist.
Everything is designed to take some of da Vinci's great works, even his sketches and simple ideas, and turn them into multimedia sensory experiences.
It's an homage to Leonardo and also our vision of where these multimedia exhibits can go in the future, not only an immersive room, but the creation of different sensorial experiences.
One of the peculiarities of Leonardo's life was that he left behind so much unfinished work. One researcher says that suggests that the artist, known for being temperamental, may have been suffering from what most people think of as a thoroughly modern malady, attention deficit disorder.
Obviously, any psychiatric diagnosis is difficult to make because we don't have biological markers, but I'm quite confident that ADHD, among all the suggestions that have been made in the past, is the most plausible explanations for Leonardo's dissipative genius and erratic behavior.
The possibility that Leonardo had ADHD is a hopeful diagnosis because it shows that someone with a learning disability can accomplish a lot.
If Leonardo da Vinci had ADHD, anyone can have ADHD, and anyone is entitled really to aspire to achieve what is their potential and what they were meant to achieve.
Leonardo's work will be on display in Milan through September. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook at VOA Asia. And take us wherever you go by downloading our podcast from voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us today and invite you to come back tomorrow for another episode of VOA Asia. For our entire team and the great people behind the scenes who put this show on the air every day, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.